You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week, lawyers for Climate Action New Zealand took the Climate Change Minister Simon Watts to Wellington's High Court on the government's lack of consultation in dismantling dozens of climate policies shortly after the last election. Also under scrutiny is the government's over-reliance on offsetting climate emissions through planting pine trees. Internationally, similar court cases have pressured governments like that of the Netherlands and the United Kingdom to revisit their own climate change policies. Next week, leaders in the field of climate litigation will gather in Tamaki Makaurau to discuss these developments and more, with an eye to the changes occurring internationally. To understand this arena of the climate crisis, I spoke to Associate Professor of Law, Vernon Rive, and Chair of the upcoming Climate Litigation Conference. Associate Professor Vernon Rive, kia ora. So starting out broadly, when we talk about climate law and litigation, are we talking about kind of newer laws that directly relate to climate, like, for example, the government must reduce emissions by a certain amount, or are we talking about the use of existing laws to make these goals, or is it more of a kind of mix?
Yeah, kia ora, Theo, great to be here. It is really a mix. So there has been a significant increase in people going to the courts to try and influence the direction of climate change policy all around the world, and New Zealand is no exception here. And litigants are using all sorts of strategies. Many of the strategies involve asking the courts for clarification or enforcement of newer specific climate change laws. In New Zealand, we have the Climate Change Response Act 2002 that was amended by the Zero Carbon Amendment Act in 2019. And in other countries, there are also targeted specific climate acts. The UK, for example, has a statutory framework which is similar to New Zealand's, and litigants have frequently and increasingly gone to the courts to get clarification, as I said, or enforcement when they think that various actors, including governments, are not complying with their legal obligations in relation to climate change.
And how influential are those overseas cases or developments to what's happening in New Zealand?
They're pretty influential. There's a lot of kind of cross-fertilisation that happens between courts in different jurisdictions, and New Zealand with a legal system which is based on the UK legal system often draws on developments in judicial decision-making from the UK, from other countries such as Ireland. And there's also increasingly reference to cases from European jurisdictions. There have been a number of really significant cases from the Netherlands, from Germany, and from other places. So judges all around the world are looking at what their fellow judges are doing, and there has been quite heavy reliance, I think, on UK case law in New Zealand climate litigation, including the case which is currently before the High Court in Wellington.
Yeah, so jumping on to that, this case has come to the High Court in Wellington this week, and it involves the Lawyers for Climate Action taking the Climate Change Minister, Simon Watts, to court for dismantling a large portion of New Zealand's climate policies without consultation, amongst some other things. How well does this case kind of fit into developments in New Zealand and in the international context?
Yeah, so it's another example of litigants asking the courts to enforce legal obligations under a piece of legislation. So it's not a, you know, it's not a radically unusual case from that respect, but there are some features of the case in New Zealand which mark it out as a little different to what's happening overseas. One of those features is the aspect of the claim where Lawyers for Climate Action and the Environmental Law Initiative are asking the court to assess whether the New Zealand government's heavy reliance on tree planting fits with its domestic legal obligations as well as its international legal obligations. And that's an aspect of the case which is different to what has happened overseas.
Right, and is that digging into kind of the difference between offsetting emissions versus reducing them?
Yeah, absolutely. The environmental groups say that it's far preferable for emissions reductions to be achieved by stopping emissions at source. So, for example, moving from reliance on fossil fuels to electricity, especially helpful in New Zealand because we have such a high level of renewable electricity generation. So they say better to get people off petrol and diesel cars into electrics, better for large industries to be reducing the reliance on coal and on oil, and for them also to be looking at renewable forms of energy. Those are all better ways of addressing this climate crisis than heavy reliance on, in New Zealand, monocultural pine plantations, which are part of the solution. Yep, they do remove carbon dioxide from the environment, but there are risks associated with this really heavy reliance on tree planting, including the possibility, increased risk because of climate change, of trees burning down or other things going wrong. The other problem with reliance on tree planting is that you really need to kind of commit to that tree planting for the long term. So if you're going to get the benefit of emissions reductions from tree planting, a forest needs to stay in forestry planting, you know, for the foreseeable future. And many people kind of regard New Zealand as significantly covered by monocultural pine plantation as not good from an environmental perspective. It doesn't help with biodiversity, and it carries those risks that I talked about.
Right, and I imagine that eventually you run out of land to plant these trees on.
Yeah, I mean, land is a limited resource. You run out of land. I guess the other problem with it is that it allows people to kind of delay the major revolution economically and environmentally, which is turning away from reliance on fossil fuels. That is going to happen. It's going to have to happen. And the longer we rely on tree planting, the longer we delay our transition away from fossil fuels towards renewables, the worse will be the pain, and that pain will be suffered by future generations who will have their options limited for them and will be having to kind of deal with more disruptive transitions than would occur if it were a smooth kind of transition over a longer period of time. So part of the claim is, let's not leave this problem for future generations. Let's start dealing with it now.
So if the government is found to have acted unlawfully, is there anything stopping them from passing legislation that makes what they did legal? I mean, looking at kind of recent cases, they've indicated with the case against Uber employees being found to be employees by the courts, they've signalled legislation will be passed to change that. They've recently passed legislation in the Social Security Amendment that's gone back on what courts have found. We also had the case of police photos being made legal, taking photos of people in public. Is there anything that can stop them from then going back and passing legislation that makes all these changes legal?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer to that is no. We have a constitutional system in New Zealand which gives great power to Parliament. We don't have any overriding constitution which would limit the ability of Parliament to be passing legislation. So the strict legal answer is no, the Parliament can do what it wants to. There is a preference, and that's a preference which has been kind of shared and expressed by the current coalition government, through the Regulatory Standards Bill, that type of retrospective legislation where courts are going back and effectively legalising acts which may have been declared illegal by the courts is not a good way of operating government. It's not a good way of operating in society. So there would be a political risk, I guess, associated with that kind of retrospective legislation, but technically it's possible. As you note, the examples that you gave show that governments, and not only the current coalition government, but previous governments have done that from time to time.
So looking towards placing us in that international context, are there any cases of, for example, countries taking cases against another country, or any opportunity for that to add that kind of international pressure?
Yeah, there's a lot of thinking about this now, especially in the wake of the International Court of Justice's advisory opinion, which was delivered last year, which has really kind of opened the way, I guess, for this kind of country-to-country litigation. It's very difficult to bring these sorts of cases where one country effectively sues another country. There are a lot of complexities in the international law process for that, which we probably don't have time to talk about now. But in theory, yes, it is possible. for there to be lawsuits brought by countries, for example, countries who are especially exposed to the effects of climate change, attempting to sue a large emitter. And it's one of the issues, among others, that we're going to be talking about at a climate litigation conference that the New Zealand Centre for Environmental Law, Lawyers for Climate Action and the Legal Research Foundation are hosting at the Whale Pacifica, starting on the 27th of March, so just a week or so away from that. So we've got some experts who will come and talk about the possibility of that type of country-to-country lawsuits. I think it's more likely in the shorter to medium term that most of the litigation action is going to be in domestic courts, the kind of case that's happening in Wellington at the moment. And overseas, that is also happening, where environmental groups are suing their governments. Sometimes they're also suing large corporate emitters. And they, amongst their case strategy, are relying on findings of the International Court of Justice, such as the ones in its advisory opinion. So it's a kind of an interesting, complex relationship between international law, including the types of decisions that come out of tribunals and courts at the international level, feeding into and influencing domestic litigation.
That was Associate Professor at the Auckland Law School, Vernon Rive, on the climate litigation developments in Aotearoa, New Zealand and abroad.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.